All right, so we are going to talk about, is K-State a tournament team now that the dust has settled? Now that Ishmael Massoud takes up the last scholarship, it appears, as of right now, that any movement is done. Although, ask Oklahoma, who just lost Davion Harmon today, things can still change. But I do want to touch on this briefly because it's the big story of the day, and Derek and I opened up the first hour of the show discussing this. The new transfer legislation has now officially been announced by the NCAA. I guess I will say with the caveat that they're saying if legislation adopted by the Division I Council is ratified by the Board of Directors, the board meets April 28th. I guess the step that we got today is that the legislation has been adopted by the Division I Council. This, of course, means one-time transfer rule. So athletes across all sports can transfer once without penalty. You don't have to sit out a year. That's why the portal has exploded in football and basketball, and particularly right now, everybody is in the throes of what's happening with the basketball transfer portal. Make no mistake, this ushers in a completely new era of college sports. Like, it will be the transfer portal era. I think it is that significant in the way that it changes the game. And there are plenty of pluses and plenty of minuses on both sides of this. I don't think that has to be a bad thing, though. I think there's a lot of reaction, especially from the coaches' side, that is like, oh, this is terrible, and guys will lose spots, guys will transfer thinking they have a spot, and it won't work out for them, and it's going to be bad. And I don't disagree that there will certainly be some bad that comes with it. But ultimately, what we're talking about doing is leveling the playing field. And it was all about the student-athlete experience, which is really what this is supposed to be for, making it equitable to coaches. If you are a player at Texas Tech, your head coach just left with no penalty. In fact, will be making more money, I'm sure. The opposite of a penalty. He gets to leave, go take over a better job in a bigger place with more money, and now, before this rule, you're stuck. And if you want to go somewhere because you came to play for that guy, you have to go sit out a year and waste a year of your life. Okay, maybe not waste, but in some ways, waste what everybody's really there for, which is to play sports. You have to sit out a year. That's not fair. I mean, it's not fair. Let's be honest. I know that, you know, fair is where you go to ride the Ferris wheel or whatever, and it's not. But the goal here is to make this as equitable as possible, and that was not a fair thing at all, especially when the coaches are making all the money here. So I'm all for it, big picture. I absolutely am, and I think some of the shortcomings will be worked out long term. I think there will be plenty of consequences, plenty of unintended consequences that are positive and negative from this, and I think there's a lot that will need to sort itself out. But I think there's always a market correction. I don't think this or name, image, and likeness will be the death of amateur sports. I think there will be market corrections that make it not quite as bad in terms of the mass amounts of kids that are transferring right now, and therefore a lot winding up without homes. I think it's just one of those things where it's a big change, and everybody is always very hesitant to change. It's a big change, and it will have to change the way that a lot of people operate, and that a lot of this works. And that's why older coaches like a Bruce Weber, like a Roy Williams, who sounded off about this on his way out the door at North Carolina, they didn't want to deal with it. Guys that have been in the business for a long time and have done it one way, they're going to be much more hesitant on change than a younger guy like, we just also talked last hour about Shane Southwell. Young, under 30 assistant coach who went back to his roots in Harlem and pulled K-State two transfers. Like that. When K-State needed transfers, he went and got them. Understood how it worked. Didn't whine and complain about it. Just got it done. And that's what he will know as a coach now coming up moving forward. So as coaches start to develop an understanding of that, this will grow and evolve. I am not somebody sitting here bummed about it. I'm not somebody sitting here whining about it. I'm going to be open to change here and seeing what it is that happens.
Well, my tone is not going to change. I am not in favor of – I'm in favor of the freedom of them being able to transfer, of course. But after a couple of years, you're unhappy by your performance and your numbers and your minutes. You decide to go somewhere else and take your chances of going somewhere else and maybe getting more playing time, maybe having more of a role. but it could definitely, you could fall flat on your face and it doesn't work. But I am in favor, for sure, of more freedom. Just because I'm the old man of this group and don't like all the guys transferring every single year, and you're seeing more and more transfers every year, doesn't mean that I don't like coaches trying to adjust to it, because you have to, but it might make coaching a little bit younger in college basketball. The older ones out there, we've seen it, you've mentioned it, John, that they're probably thinking, okay, I don't have the energy anymore for this. I don't have the energy to be recruiting my players 24/7, 365.
That's exactly the concern that Bruce Weber voiced when he was on here last week. It was that I now feel like the season ends and I don't get to relax because I have to go re-recruit my roster and re-recruit my players. Understood. If I were a coach and I had been doing it this way for a long time, I'm sure I would feel the exact same way. I will just also point out, these coaches, a lot of them are making seven figures. Pretty much all of them at the Division I level are making six figures. They get paid very handsomely to do this. They will find a way. They will find a way to, or if they don't, another wave of young, hungry, up-and-coming coaches will do that gladly for that salary, and it will work itself out. That's just the reality of the situation. Now, what it means for K-State this year is that K-State got better. I mean, by the way, I would also point that out. Yes, it was more work for Bruce and his staff, but they've become, to me, unequivocally better on paper than what they were last year. Upgrading with Mark Smith over Dejuan Gordon, upgrading by no Rudy Williams, and now you bring in Marquise Noel, and upgrading, swapping Antonio Gordon for Ishmael Massoud. They got better from the portal. But what everybody wants to know is, like, is this actually now a tournament team? Like, how good do they actually become? What does that actually mean? My answer is pretty simple. I think, and a lot of you will hate this answer, I think the team will be good enough to force a tough decision for Gene Taylor about 11 months from now, but not good enough to, like, fully satisfy everybody. There's no scenario where Bruce Weber could win a national championship, not everybody would be satisfied. You would still, oh, don't give me that look. You would still have people out there finding some way to crap on it. You would.
A national championship.
Yes, the anti-Bruce crowd, absolutely.
A school that doesn't have a single team national title.
They beat Kentucky in the, we're not going to get sidetracked on this, but they beat Kentucky.
You said it.
They beat Kentucky in the Sweet 16 to go to the Elite Eight, and people crapped on it. He's the only guy in the league to win multiple Big 12 titles outside of Bill Self. Everybody's crapped on it. They would find a way. It's the world of Twitter in 2021. But, you know, in terms of, like, realistic, like, is he going to make a second weekend of the NCAA tournament with this group? I doubt it. I don't think that. Is he going to legitimately challenge for a league championship? No, I don't think so. But I think, can this team be 6th or 7th in the Big 12, which would put you squarely on the bubble for the NCAA tournament? I do think they can be that. There's certainly enough talent there. Look, 6 top 150 recruits, and basically 7 if you're going to count Kasubke, who was in the 150 for a long time. Like, that's more than enough raw talent for somebody, for Kansas State to get to the tournament, more than enough raw talent. More than enough raw talent. And I think the biggest thing with what they've done is they've provided, we talked so much this year about not having the infrastructure around Selton, Nigel, and Davion, not having enough else to help supplement them and their growth, like Dean Barry and Cam had early in their career with Wes, DJ, Justin Edwards. That's what they've added now, is they've added the infrastructure of experienced players who can actually step up and score and help them out. So it's not going to be all on Nigel Pack to be on shooting. It's not like he has to knock down 6 threes every night for K-State to have any chance of winning, which is basically what last year turned into. That, to me, is what's happened. Like, last year, you were asking these roses to grow from the concrete. Now, you've actually provided some soil and, like, a, you know, nice little place to actually put the plant, instead of just trying to ask it to grow out of nothing in the concrete. You've given that opportunity now to these guys. So that is the positive here, and that's the pitch for me. I just think, you know, if it were all about talent and none of this were about managing personalities and who's actually there and can you coach defense, like, if we were just looking at what this is on paper, I'd say absolutely it's a tournament team. The variables is why I hesitate, and I think in the end, I'll say they're going to be a bubble team. I'll say they're going to be a bubble team because how does Bruce handle uncharted territory? We've never seen him take in this many new players that have a certain level of expectation as to how much it is that they're going to play because of how much they've played at their previous stops. That's not something Bruce has had to manage. By the way, that's another part of the transfer era of college athletics. How will coaches manage that moving forward? There will be coaches who develop and do a better job of that than others, and they'll be held in higher regard as better coaches. That will be a skill. It's a skill. How do you manage all of that? How do you manage those personalities? We've seen it blow up on Bruce before. We've also seen it go the other way with Dean Barry and Cam, where those personalities actually meshed very well and worked out very well. That variable is enough to make me say, even though I think the talent's a tournament team, I'll take it down a notch and say bubble team because there's just a lot that will have to sort itself out.
Well, the experience is a big plus for me with all the guys that came over via the transfer portal. Mark Smith has 4 years of experience at the Power 5 level. Marquise Noel played 3 seasons at Little Rock. We're talking Division I experience here. And then Masood, he played 2 years at Wake Forest. I love the experience, but I'm going to take Marquise Noel of what I'm about to say because he's the man. He's going to be the best newcomer for K-State into this next season. I have no issues with 5'7 stud. However, I do have concerns about Mark Smith and Ishmael Masood. Be quite honest with you, I'm not convinced Masood is an upgrade from Antonio Gordon. I'm really not. Gordon, he was the best player on the team last year, averaging rebounds per game. He was over 6. You're replacing that? Masood does not replace that. He is not going to replace the rebounds that Antonio Gordon had. And I get it. K-State was a terrible team shooting the 3 last year, 27%. And Antonio Gordon, who was supposed to be a shooter, was like 22% last year. It's easy to look at those 3, look at their 3-point shooting numbers around 35-ish percent for them and think, wow, this is a big upgrade. That could be a big help. But with Masood and Smith, I'm not sure what else they're going to do besides shoot 3s. I really am concerned about what else they can do for this team without wanting to pop up a 3-pointer in a comfort zone, in a comfortable spot on the floor.
Well, for Smith, I don't think it matters nearly as much. I think it matters probably more for Masood. Smith, I think, is at least an average defender. You don't start 80 games at the college level by being just a terrible defender. So I think he'll at least be adequate. I think there's more of a reason for concern with Masood. That one is, but that's a wild card. Masood is much more a wild card to me than Mark Smith actually is. But my question here is, you're not really answering the question. Like, what is this team then?
I do not see K-State as a tournament team right now. First of all, all we really have to see on these 3 guys is highlight tapes we can find on Rivals or YouTube. And that's the thing. You're going to see highlights. You're not going to see mistakes. You're really not going to see hardly any defense. You're going to see him making shots. And that's what a highlight reel is scoring points in any sport. But, like, even back to Masood, I mean, I'm honestly, his 3-point shooting is good. His 2-point shooting is really not that good. He's 35% from 2. Antonio Gordon was 56% from 2. And I'm sure a lot of those are layups. But Antonio Gordon simply was just better in that part of the game. So that's where I really sit with not being convinced about Masood. Going back to Smith, again, he's in the same boat to me. I'm not sure what else he's going to do. Probably a better defender. I hope he is a better defender than Masood. But, I mean, the jury's out. I don't know. I really don't know. I haven't seen enough on these guys yet. But as I sit right now, I would not name K-State a tournament team.
I'm just going to say bubble. I'm going to ride the fence more by just saying bubble team. Like, if you're going to be on the bubble, a break or two here can make or break you one way or the other. I wouldn't let Ishmael Masood be the determining factor in any of this, but I can understand why you'd say they would not be a tournament team. Maybe that's a Twitter poll that I should put out there because we also have coming up here Bruce Weber with a definitive statement in one of the press releases today, actually. You don't typically see that, but about what K-State is going to be next year in regard to the NCAA tournament. So we'll let you know about that. Also, if you're somebody out there that hates the transfer portal era of college athletics, you will definitely want to listen to the news that I'm about to drop on you coming up next. So flying in the face of the news today that the Division I Council has adopted the new transfer legislation, what that means, everybody does get a free pass, one free opportunity to transfer without any penalty, without having to sit out a year. We have Trevor Hudgens, former Manhattan High Indian, absolute baller at Northwest Missouri. He is the reigning Division II Player of the Year. He is a multi-national champion at Northwest Missouri State. And he told ESPN today that despite speculation about whether or not he would enter the transfer portal as somebody that has balled out, put 20-plus on Duke and Coach K a couple of years ago, obviously D2 Player of the Year now, you're seeing guys like kid that Kansas got coming and jumping up a level to go play at major, major Power 5 places. He told ESPN that he is staying at Northwest Missouri State for his senior year. And the quote that really stood out to me here from this article is, quote, "My coach took a chance on me when not a lot of teams did. He believed in me, and that's my reason for going back." And this was, I mean, by the way, like, very cool on a number of levels here, but I thought awesome for Trevor Hudgens that, like, this was, I mean, Jonathan Giovanni wrote about it for ESPN. Like, that's a major story. I'm looking at ESPN.com right now on the college basketball page. One of their top headlines is D2 Player of the Year Hudgens returning to Northwest Missouri State for senior year. So this was a big deal, and you can understand the speculation. And frankly, like I said here selfishly a couple of weeks ago, I would like to see him do it. I mean, I'm somebody that called a bunch of Trevor Hudgens games at Manhattan. I've seen the genesis of him as a player, and I think it's awesome that he is killing it like he is. And I would absolutely love to see how that winds up translating at the Division I level. I would first of all, I'd love to know what the interest is. Like, even if I could just ask Trevor, like, hey, man, like, what interest did you have? Like, what came up on your phone? Who was texting you? I would love to know that. But he made the pick that is going to be music to a lot of people's ears. And I can already tell by how this tweet that I put out about it is blowing up on Twitter. I didn't really think all that much of it. People love it. People are eating it up. My coach took a chance on me when not a lot of teams did. He believed in me, and that's my reason for going back. Hey, that's great, and that's honorable. And if you are somebody that sticks to that, that principle will serve you well in your life. I'm not here to tell you any differently. I don't have nearly as much a problem with the kid these days who is not as loyal, but it doesn't mean that I don't respect that and see, obviously, the value in that for Hudgens. I think being honest, hey, believe in yourself. Do what you think is right. Don't leave a great situation if you think it's a great situation, 100%. But the article does go on to talk about, like, opportunities at the NBA, and it points out that Hudgens says the fact that another Division II graduate, Broderick Thomas of Truman State, is currently seeing minutes in the NBA as a rookie with the Cavs, showing there's a pathway for college basketball players outside of D1. It's all well and good, and I'm sure if he is good enough, like, someone will find you. There would be a path still to get there. I'm not saying that by staying in Northwest Missouri, he's shutting doors to the NBA. If you can play, people will find you. And he has enough publicity at this point that, like, there will be people paying attention to him. He'll get workouts. He will have that opportunity. But if we're being honest, like, if what he were concerned about the most was his NBA future and NBA potential, I mean, the better route to go definitely is to go compete at the D1 level. Like, go show that you can do it. That teams would be more willing, I think, to go do that right away as soon as you leave if you had that on your resume. But if you don't, you could also come back and say, well, John, what if he goes there and it doesn't work out as well? Fair point. You're right. So wherever you're most comfortable and you think you're going to play your best basketball and whatever reasons you have, that's the decision you should make. I think it's honorable. I think it's great. Selfishly, I do wish – I mean, I have no ties to Northwest Missouri. I don't get anything by watching Northwest Missouri play basketball. I am disappointed, but only because of purely selfish reasons. Here to find this out from Hudgens. That's it. That's all. Wish him the best. And I hope like hell he makes it to the league. That would be great. Not just for the sake of it being somebody from Manhattan, from MHK, but somebody that I had a chance to call his games Like, I feel somewhat of a personal stake in that, which it would be very cool. It's definitely a different story and not the one that you're used to reading today. Everything else, I'm looking down the bottom line of these college basketball stories. It's like Hudgens returning to Northwest Missouri State, and everything else is like Marquette adds two in transfer hall. Like, what's next at Arizona after Sean Miller's departure? You know, he's the guy that's cheating and gets fired. Like, way different than all the other headlines that you're seeing right now.
Trevor Hudgens, a career 50.3 three-point shooter.
Yeah, my God.
Incredible. 90% from the free throw line last year, shooting 53.5% from the field. That's insane.
I do love, and Mitch, this goes back to our discussion about, like, Bruce could win a national championship and somebody would still have a problem with it. I had somebody in my mentions going, man, Bruce Weber really missed out here. Terrible recruiting miss to not go get Trevor Hudgens. I mean, like, that's one of those where it's like, listen, I would love to see what he could do at K-State. I am thrilled that he's having the success he is. Every K-State fan would have freaked out if Bruce Weber offered Trevor Hudgens a scholarship. Like, he was small. He was not being recruited by other Division I schools.
Nope.
And if you think people freaked out about small-time K-State losing to Fort Hays State or whatever, what are you going to do? Bruce Weber is offering the kid from Manhattan High who's undersized, who has no other D1 attention. Like, I'm questioning Maximus Edwards, who they signed today. I'm questioning that. And that's a kid from, like, the Northeast, like the New York area, who, you know, has a Seton Hall offer. You know, like, this is the revisionist history that just, you know, people who want to be haters will go back and do, but they would have absolutely, absolutely clobbered that had it actually happened. Now, fair to point out here, in defense of Bruce Weber, people crush him for a lot of things. Most of the time, that is, like, what he says, and how he just doesn't always come across great in public, and the narrative sometimes can get away from him. But how about this quote? This was from the press release of Isaiah Massoud, or Ishmael Massoud. He says, quote, "We go into this offseason with the approach that we are going to be an NCAA tournament team and compete for the top of the Big 12. He said the right thing. Like, that's a quote that was buried in a press release that most of the time, I'll be honest, I wouldn't have read. It was a rarity that I went through and actually read through this, and I think it was because I saw that there were like six quotes at the bottom, with three from Shane Southwell and three from Bruce Weber. But he is saying here, Gene Taylor did not, a couple of weeks ago when he was on the show and we asked him, hey, what's your conversation? What's your expectation for next year? Gene wouldn't go so far as to say it's the NCAA tournament or bust. It sounds like that was probably the consensus behind closed doors, but he didn't come out and say it publicly. Bruce just did. We go into this offseason with the approach that we are going to be an NCAA tournament team and compete for the top of the Big 12. Can we give him credit? This is what never happens. Like, nobody will give him credit when he does say the right thing. It's just always wait and pounce on the things that are the wrong thing. That was saying the right thing. Fans want an NCAA tournament next year. 2 years of not being in the tournament and being as bad as they have been produces that as the natural expectation. And Bruce seems to be embracing that. Let's give him some credit. So if nobody else is going to do it, I will stand up here and say, even though we crush him a lot most of the time, this is not his forte, he did something well here. And at least be there, if you're going to be the one that crushes him, at least be there to acknowledge when something positive here happens.
Doesn't every coach in every conference throughout Division I have the goal of making the NCAA tournament? And that's why you play the game, right? Everybody wants to go dancing. Everybody wants to have that shot to play for the big one. Who doesn't want to be tops of the conference? Who doesn't want a Big 12 championship? I'm just saying, every coach makes that comment every year.
Did we hear it last year? We certainly didn't hear compete for the top of the Big 12.
If he was asked the question, I'm sure he would have said something in that tone, no doubt.
I actually don't know. I would be very curious, you know, if we could go back into time and see if that was asked or if re-asked that question, what he would say, because I'm not sure that he would, because I think I think they knew last year that there were going to be some problems. Look, that's neither here nor there. You're right. A coach at a program with any level of expectation should stand up there every year and say, like, hey, yes, our expectation is to make the tournament every single year.
Well, you're right.
But I mean, at least this time he said it, okay? Like, you know, most of the time we're sitting here saying, like, oh, you didn't do your chores, you didn't do your chores, you didn't do your chores. Well, he did his chores without being prompted. Just at you can at least acknowledge that that happened, okay? I understand what you're saying. It's like, hey, participation trophy generation, you're going to give this guy a cookie just for saying, well.
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't need an attaboy for it.
He's getting one from me because the demerits come in very strong.
Well, then that tells me you have low standards for Bruce Weber.
I think I just understand what he is as somebody in the media. Like, he's never going to be the one to say the right thing consistently. Doesn't mean I can't appreciate what he does. Yes, my expectations for Bruce Weber as far as how he is going to handle things publicly and what he will say in media settings, that is low. Those expectations are low. Admittedly, they are. And so I am going to, but I feel like that your expectations for every person have to be a little bit different. They have to morph to who the person actually is. So I will not apologize for standing here and saying, attaboy. Here is my official attaboy. That's it. That's all I have to say.
He said the right things, and he said it at the right level. Like, he didn't go too far in saying, when I mean too far is like, from the fan standpoint, saying our goal is to get to a Final Four, compete for a national championship. I wouldn't do it personally, but the haters would mock him. He would get mocked for saying something like that. Battling for the top spot in the conference, goal is to get to the NCAA tournament, is definitely a goal every team has, and I would say for a fan base is an expectation. It was the right thing to say. I'm not going to argue that point.
Number one song of the day is next. Taking it back to the when with this.
1966.
I was about to say like the 50s or the 60s, but then I hesitated because I feel like sometimes I say that and you're like, no, this is actually from 1991.
I love the vibe of this song.
It's actually not bad. I don't mind this. I bet you thought I was going to come in guns a-blazing, crapping all over this thing, but I'm not. For just a little while, and then I'm gonna put you. Wait, what is this song called? Way
down here. I'm waiting for him to get to it. And you'll start crying. Right here? 96 Tears. 96 Tears by Question Mark and the Mysterians. 1 week at number one.
Feels like that's trying too hard to go for a mysterious vibe.
Well, let me fill you in here a little bit. So they're called an American garage rock band from Bay City, Michigan. So Question Mark is the lead singer. He wanted to be mysterious. He wanted to be anonymous. As a matter of fact, he's never done a concert or a public appearance without wearing sunglasses. And I gotta say, so I looked up like an old concert they had like 5 years ago, which by the way, he's still with them. It started in the mid-60s. And he's got a really good stage presence. He's like Mick Jagger out there. Really skinny. I mean, he's obviously older, but he still has all the energy, and his voice sounds just like this still. So I give him all the credit in the world. I think it's awesome. Four studio albums, two in the 60s, two in the 90s. So they really branched out there in the 70s and 80s. Totally just skipped all that kind of music.
Wow.
And they are considered a one-hit wonder with this song. 96 Tears was their debut album. Here's another reason why I really respect this band. So they recorded this whole album in like a makeshift studio in one of their living rooms in Bay City, Michigan. After they recorded it, they traveled down to Texas, and they had a company that makes records make 500. They drove back up to Michigan, and they went to all these different radio stations in like southern Michigan, and over a little bit into Canada. Well, a lot of the radio stations just kind of ignored it. It's like, oh, this nobody band, they just want us to play their record. They get a little bit of airplay, make a little bit of money. Well, it was Windsor, Ontario, Canada that caught attention. They're like, hey, this is actually a pretty good song. So they start playing it. And then folks in Detroit start listening to it like, hey, this band actually sounds pretty good. And then they started to go regional. And then it branched out nationally. And before you know it, Question Mark and the Mysterians have a number one hit. Because they pounded the pavement. They went after their dreams, and they got it.
Pound that pavement.
I'm going to play this song again because I just love the Oregon in it.
Question Mark and the Mysterians. Can I ask what the music sounded like that they made in the 90s?
I mean, you can look it up. I have no idea what they made in the 90s. One more thing about the radio stations. The only issue the band had is some of the jocks are making the mistake of calling it 69 tiers instead of 96 tiers.
Yeah, why 96?
So I guess there's a meaning behind it. There's a philosophical meaning. But Question Mark, he has refused over the years to say what 96 tiers exactly means. Well, but the back, the story of the song, we don't know exactly what the number 96 means. But Question Mark wanted people to know that he's not the one crying, okay? He's been dumped. The plans in the song are to get revenge by reuniting with the girl that broke up with him, so then he can dump her back and make her cry, give her some pain, and she can cry 96 tears.
I see. Very vindictive.
So this Oregon riff on this song is, they call it one of the most recognizable. I say they. I mean, whoever wrote the article. I didn't put the reference in here, but they said it's one of the most recognizable in rock. Also helped define the sound for that era. And they influenced bands with their organ playing. They influenced The Doors, Deep Purple, and Vanilla Fudge, among many others. This song was apparently very popular in Vietnam during the Vietnam War with the troops. And finally, 96 Tears was listed at number 210 on the 2016 Rolling Stone list of the top 500 greatest songs of all time.
I have no complaints with that, and I it's funny you say that about The Doors, because that's what I think of when I hear this. Sounds very much in the same vein as The Doors, like what I think of with The Doors. So I can dig that. And The Doors, like, that's kind of, I'm fascinated by The Doors.
Ray Manzarek.
Sure.
I think there's just two Doors still alive. Dinsmore and Manzarek. I'm thinking out loud now.
I was looking through pictures of Mr. Question Mark here. These guys are still outperforming as of 2019.
Yes, they are.
I mean,
I think that's awesome. And
sure.
They sound great. They've had so many.
How do you know they sound great?
I looked up, I said earlier in the segment, I looked up one of their concerts from like 5 years ago and sounded fantastic.
Great.
What you're hearing, they sound exactly like the track.
Okay.
Which I think at an older age, especially with a vocalist,
yeah,
I mean, you imagine maybe the voice will go a little hoarse after a while. You've done so much singing throughout the years that you might lose it a little bit. No, Question Mark has he's still nailing it.
That is fair, but I also don't like bands that sound just like it does on the recording. Like, give me a little something extra. I want something different. I'm here for something different. If I were just wanting to listen to your album, I'd listen to your album. But I get what you're saying. Respect, Mr. Question Mark. Respect. Now tell me what the 96 tiers are for. That's all I want to know. You better tell us before you croak, Mr. Question Mark.
By the way, I got to correct myself. Dinsmore, Krieger, and Manzarek for The Doors are all still alive. It's just Jim Morrison that's gone.
I suppose I should be saying Mr. Mark instead of Mr. Question Mark. Mr. Mark! Tell us what the 96 means. That's all I want to know.
John's now a mark for Question Mark and the Mysterians.
Ask us anything next. Mitch, this is from icebreakerideas.com, okay? So this is not just me coming up with this question. I just want you to know that. Do you think tattoos are sexy or not?
Yes, absolutely. 100% sexy.
I don't think we've ever agreed on anything more or more fervently than we do this.
What else we have in common is neither one of us have a tattoo. But tattoos on others, fantastic.
Big fan. Big fan. Yes. I also very much would like to get a tattoo.
As long, I'm not the fan of just like writing like inspirational quotes on the forearm. I'm not exactly into all that. But she's got a sleeve.
Oh, sleeves.
I'm melting over here.
Sleeves make me weak at the knees, Mitch.
Somebody needs to come in here and fan me. It's getting a little hot.
Yep, I would agree. Totally agree. some of these questions, man. Are your parents as attractive as you?
What?
Icebreakerideas.com, baby.
Well, I have a better haircut than my dad. I take after my mom. So, I don't know, I guess.
Boy, I tell you what, the more I scroll down, these are getting very risque. I need to go back up the list here. God. Well, I think I know the answer to this for both of us. Do you prefer cats or dogs?
Oh, come on.
We will just as fervently agree on this. I, as a child, had a neighbor, these two neighbor friends of mine. They were brothers, and I was always over there hanging out because they had so much awesome stuff. And the only bad part about it was they had this cat that would just sit there and stalk me when I came in, and it would wait until I turned my back, and it would come and scratch the back of my ankles every single time. And that turned me on to, like, hating cats. Like, I mean, obviously, dogs are great. I have a dog. I've always grown up with a dog. Dogs are amazing. Cats don't want to be your friend. They just exist merely in your presence, and then sometimes they're mean. Like, what? Where is the joy in having a cat? I could not... That is, honestly, there are a few things in a Manhattan dating market that I will say is pretty much a no-go if I'm looking at somebody on the dating app. There are people I come across, again, like, you know, the only people that you find on the dating apps when you're above the age of 25 here are vet school students. Those vet girls, yeah, you got to watch out. Like, there are some that are like, I have six cats. You better love cats.
Yeah.
No. Not happening.
So over my dating years, and I'm not trying to offend anybody, but I've come to realize those with cats seem to be a little crazier.
Well, that's not always a bad thing, but I understand what you are saying. I will not go so far as to endorse that statement. You can have cats, that's fine. I'm just not going to want to be around them. And this is coming from somebody who, I don't have... I told a story about, like, the guinea pigs. It's like the one girl I was hanging out with for a while.
I don't think so.
It was the bench girl. She's come up twice today now. Yeah, she had, like...
She's interesting.
She had guinea pigs. And I did not love that at all. They smelled. But, you know, every time I was over there, I was like, at least they're not cats. At least they're not cats.